Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Today, we spotlight the coronavirus, and my guest is biochemist Michael Behe, professor of biological sciences at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, and a senior fellow at Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Behe is author of Darwin's Black Box, named one of the 100 most important books of the 20th century by National Review and World Magazine, the follow-up The Edge of Evolution, and his most recent book, Darwin Devolves, The New Science About DNA That Challenges Evolution. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Andrew. It's always great to be with you.
On this episode, I'd like to talk with you about some comments you recently shared at Evolution News called Evolution, Design, and COVID-19. As we speak today, the world is dealing with a coronavirus pandemic, widely believed to have originated in the city of Wuhan in China in late fall of 2019. The virus has since spread to over 70 countries, infecting at least 150,000 and killing close to 6,000 as of March 15th today. And although it looks like cases in China may have peaked, cases in Europe and elsewhere are rising sharply, and a number of countries have implemented drastic containment measures to stop the spread of the virus, including the United States. So Mike, perhaps we can begin by reminding listeners what a virus actually is and how it reproduces.
Sure. A virus is a microscopic, a submicroscopic piece of DNA or RNA, a little piece of genetic material. The size of it is maybe 1/10,000th to 1/1,000,000th the size of the human genome. And it usually has a kind of a shell on the outside made of protein. And it's not living. It needs to get into a cell in order to reproduce. So it has to attach itself to a cell, get inside, and the information it carries in its DNA or RNA hijacks the machinery of the cell, and the cell reproduces the virus for it and sends copies of the virus out to infect other cells. And that process oftentimes wrecks the host cell, and that's what causes the damage.
Well, what are experts' best guesses as to how the virus jumped to humans and started causing so much trouble? As I understand it, you know, this virus is common in animals, but when it starts to jump to humans and change the strain, it can cause problems.
Yeah, that's right. It's not only we people who get viruses, but animals, dogs, birds, cattle, swine, everything has viruses that try to invade it. And we deal oftentimes with our own viruses, like the common cold, and they're used to us and we're used to them. So we get along fairly well. They cause mild symptoms oftentimes. But sometimes when an animal has a virus and a mutation in it would allow it to infect humans, if a person gets too close to the animal or is in, say, a market where animals are slaughtered and traded and so on, sometimes the virus jumps to the human, and then it behaves kind of like an invasive species. And we don't have any immunity to that. It's a pretty new virus that humanity hasn't dealt with, and so it can be much more virulent than the more common viruses that we have to deal with.
Okay. How do these come about? What kind of evolution are we talking about here?
Well, that's an excellent question. It turns out science has no clue as to how viruses arose. It's kind of like an origin of life question. Nobody in science knows how life really originated, although there's lots and lots of speculations. Same thing with viruses. And it turns out that although these epidemics and pandemics spring up from time to time, it's not because there's a brand new virus coming about. Rather, it's because there are some small changes to viruses that are already around in the world. The coronavirus that's causing so much trouble right now, its general structure has been around for tens of millions of years. and most other viruses too, like the Ebola virus and the flu virus. Their structures have been around for a very long time. It's only when they kind of adjust or mutate around the edges so that they can gain an entry into human cells that they infect people and start to cause trouble.
Ah, I see. So what makes COVID-19 more dangerous or virulent than other strains that we've seen in the past?
Well, when a virus jumps from one species to another, the new species generally doesn't have any immunity to it. We build up immunity to viruses that commonly circulate in humanity, and so do other species that have viruses that circulate within that species. But if it jumps species, then our immune system hasn't seen it before or hasn't seen anything much like it before. And so the response of the immune system to the virus is a lot slower, and that gives the virus a lot more time to replicate and cause damage and infect other people while your immune system is starting to try to deal with it. So the big problem is that it has jumped from some sort of animal in the wild to people. And so it's kind of it's from a foreign source, a different organism. And so until humanity as a whole builds up some immunity to it, then it will be more virulent than the other viruses that we commonly get.
And that's why they call it the novel coronavirus, correct?
Yeah, well, that's one reason. It's kind of a technical term, too. It's a coronavirus, but coronavirus is a class of viruses, and some of them actually cause common colds. We deal with some coronaviruses all the time, but the one that is causing the trouble right now, it has a DNA sequence that is less similar to the ones that we usually deal with. It's about 90% the same, but it turns out that's a fairly big change from what our immune systems are used to dealing with. So that 10% kind of automatically makes us classify it as a novel one, considerably different than we usually deal with.
I see. Something caught my eye the other day. I was reading Neil Shubin's essay in the Wall Street Journal, making the claim that viruses have shaped our DNA. He's obviously looking at it from a Darwinian perspective. He says humans have a complex relationship with viruses and that our genome is a graveyard for ancient viruses. What does he mean by that, and how would you respond?
Well, it turns out that when scientists sequenced the human genome, we found out that a large fraction of it are sequences that are very similar to viruses, yes, to viruses. And so some people interpret that as saying, well, over long, long times, you know, occasionally we catch viruses and they embed themselves in the genome and they get stuck there and we can't get rid of them. And so we just accumulate them over time. And that was what was thought. But then later on, we discovered that a number of these sometimes are close to genes that have important roles to play in the development of our bodies and the nervous systems and so on, and that they actually help develop our bodies. So exactly what is going on is kind of unclear, but it does seem to show that sequences that sure look like they were viruses can play positive roles in the development of human beings. So yeah, it is a complex relationship, but we can't say definitely that viruses are all bad.
Okay, so it's similar to the junk DNA argument. Scientists, some of them would say that 98% of our genome is just junk from our evolutionary past. You're saying that there could well be a positive and necessary role that these viruses play in humanity.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There was a paper a little while back, maybe 5 years or so, had the memorable title, Jewels Among the Junk. And it just said that what scientists had thought was junk simply because they didn't know what it did, turned out to have very important functions. And these sequences that resemble viruses now that are in our genomes, people are discovering important functions for those too. So it's real premature for any person to say that this or that feature of our genome is bad or useless, because the history of biology is that when we think something is useless, we always discover that it's doing something important.
Yeah. Well, I like the analogy you used in your post comparing a virus outbreak to a storm on the ocean. Can you explain that one to our listeners?
Yeah, I just wanted to deal with the point that some people say, why do we have to suffer through these epidemics and these problems? And that a good way to look at it, I think, is that most everybody will agree that the laws of nature are good. They're perfect for fostering life, and that we need water, and there's large oceans on our planet, and they're necessary for life too. But nonetheless, although they're all good, if you're kind of out in a sailboat on the ocean and a strong storm arises, you would be excused for saying, why do storms have to happen? I'm in danger. Help me. But if there are such things as laws of nature and, oceans are necessary and good, then from time to time, storms will arise. That's just a consequence of these good things. In the same way, viruses do a lot of things in nature. They're not just aimed at people. Viruses coexist with all organisms, and they're perhaps the most numerous pieces of genetic information on the planet. So given the large number of viruses, even if they are doing good, and the way they interact with living organisms, from time to time, you might expect that there is something like a storm in the virosphere, and that a virus starts doing something that it wasn't particularly intended to do, but it's kind of like a storm on the ocean. And when we're caught in it, when we're caught in a storm or in an epidemic, we can be excused for thinking that's bad, but it's really part of how nature is built. And it's actually kind of a side effect of something that's very good.
Well, in your opinion, what steps should we take in order to overcome the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, I'm certainly not a virologist or a public health expert, so I would just say, listen to these guys. And one of the most important things is to, not go into crowds and to practice, nice common hygienic techniques. Just wash your hands and try to be aware of it. This is a time when everybody has to pitch in and everybody has to be aware of problem and do their bit, because even a subset of people who don't want to bother with it and go about living as if the pandemic were going on could have outsized effects on the rest of the population. So you've heard social distancing all the time. Follow that advice and avoid contact with people as much as possible, and we'll get through this.
Mike, thanks so much for lending your voice to the situation, for your comments at Evolution News, and for sharing this new information with us on the podcast. We appreciate your time.
Sure, Andrew. It's always always a good time to speak with you.
Well, stay safe and healthy.
Thanks. You too.
Well, you can learn more about Michael Behe's newest book, which is excellent, at darwindevolves.com. You can check out other things he's written at evolutionnews.org. To do that, just look for his name and picture under the Writers tab on the front page of evolutionnews.org. And of course, you can listen to other episodes of ID the Future with all the time you have on your hands as we're moving through this episode. Wherever podcasts are found, you'll find ID the Future or at idthefuture.com. I'm Andrew McDermott for ID the Future. Thanks for listening. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.